think this is the moment where sustainability and technology and fashion can finally collide. That's my dream for Web3, to be this solution that brings it all together, like ultimate transparency, so no brand or consumer can say, oh, I didn't know that that was bad for the planet, or I didn't know that this garment caused, you know, a person harm. I really think that's the only way that things are going to change. But the technology is still new. It's nascent. And I think it has to develop a lot more for it to become something that's going to have impact. But it has to start.
Hello and welcome to season 3 of the Women of Web3 podcast. I can't believe I'm saying that. We launched in April 2022, which is about 7 years ago in Web3. If you don't know me already, I'm your host, Lauren Ingram. I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community on a mission to educate as many women as possible about Web3 and help them seize opportunities in it. And we do that through jobs, resources, and connections. So in practice, that means we have a jobs platform and a talent collective that you can apply to join if you're open to Web3 employers seeing your profile. We also host really special events, and we have learning resources like this podcast. And because we want to make sure that our content and everything we do is for free for the community, and so we fund that by partnering with amazing Web2 and Web3 brands and doing corporate workshops, courses, partner events, and more. In every episode of the Women of Web3 podcast, I interview an incredible leader about their career path, their strategies, and we demystify Web3, NFTs, crypto, the metaverse, even AI, starting off simple before going deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really, really helps more women, more people find the podcast. We have had a really busy summer at Women of Web3. Our community has grown to nearly 25,000 women. I did a TEDx talk about the fact that women risk being left behind in the next iteration of the internet, but it's not too late to change that. And we got a nice tweet, or I guess X, from Stephen Bartlett saying that he loves what we're doing. We've also just wrapped a really special dinner party for the Women of Web3 in London, bringing together leaders and community members. And I just know that we're going to hear from guests afterwards to say that they're going to meet up for coffee or they're starting a Web3 venture together. There's something really unique about bringing together women in person. It was phenomenal. So for our first guest of season 3, I'm really excited to have Ashley McDonald join the show. Ashley is the Global Client Activation Director at Luxury House Pooch. That's P-U-I-G. They own lots of huge brands that you'd know, such as Carolina Herrera, Jean-Paul Gaultier, and United Colors of Benetton. She's also the host of the ridiculously popular Tech-Powered Luxury podcast, so you should definitely check that one out. And today you're going to hear all about the exact methods that she used to get to where she is today as a leader at the intersection of luxury and tech, having worked at Dior, LVMH, and Google. And now she's sitting on boards already. She's been amazingly strategic about her choices, so you're going to want to take notes. So without further ado, here's Ashley. Welcome to the show, Ashley. I'd love for you to introduce yourself with a bit about your role, what you do, and where your work touches Web3.
Hi, Lauren. First and foremost, thank you for having me. We keep meeting like this. No, I'm really happy to be on your podcast, and I've been an avid listener, and also we have collaborated together through our companies as well. So it's really cool to go full circle. So a little bit about myself. As you said, my name is Ashley. I'm originally from Ireland, but I've been living in Paris and Geneva and soon Paris again for the last 10 or so years. And from a really, really young age, I was obsessed with everything to do with fashion and beauty, but also technology, and somehow managed to find a career that really encompassed both of those worlds. So that's what I've been focused on basically since my first ever internships and full-time roles. And I've been lucky enough to work at LVMH Group, at Dior, also at Google, managing the LVMH portfolio. And now for the last almost 3 years, I've been with a group called Pooch, spelled P-U-I-G. It's a Spanish group that nobody knows how to pronounce. But we're a luxury group, and we have over 30 luxury fashion and beauty brands, also some beautiful skincare brands. And I'm about to change roles. So by the time this comes out, I'll be in my new role, and I'll be transitioning from Global Digital Media and E-commerce Director to Global Client Activation Director. So moving into a new strategic phase for the company, it's going to be a new team, a whole new way of looking at global consumers. And of course, blockchain and Web3 technology will be core to the success of that new division. So that's me.
Amazing. So I'm going to dive straight into that work that you've mentioned that we've done together. I mean, I think Women of Web3 actually played a fairly small role in terms of what sounded like a huge activation overall. I'm sure it was a big piece of work internally and externally, which was for Carolina Herrera. And this was a major step for Pooch, who, as you say, own lots of different brands, including stuff like all the Jean-Paul Gaultier perfumes, just like any big, beautiful perfume brand or luxury brand, often they're owned by Pooch. So this was quite a big step for you guys. Yes. In terms of entering the Web3 space. So what did it entail?
Well, first of all, we had this perfume launch. It kind of always starts with a launch, right? A physical product. And as you said, Carolina Herrera, it's one of the biggest brands in the Puig portfolio. So we really own, operate and distribute this brand and many others, including Jean Paul Gaultier, Paco Rabanne, we have Dries Van Noten, Charlotte Tilbury, Byredo. So we have loads of brands. But Carolina Herrera, it's one of the oldest brands within the group. And historically, with brands like Carolina Herrera, you have the fashion house, which is really creating the dream. It's creating the image. It really started with this fashion designer creating beautiful dresses and couture. And then the beauty side of business comes. And in general, beauty is the revenue driver. It's the money maker. It's the cash cow of so many luxury groups if it's done right, because you can create a product that's scalable. So you design it once, whether that's the actual design of the product and the packaging or the scent of the fragrance. And you can scale that internationally and it can really sit on shelves anywhere in the world that you're happy for it to be. Selective distribution. So it's not going to be sold absolutely anywhere. It's not going to be sold in supermarkets, for example, but it'll be sold through retailers and distributors that are validated to actually sell the product. And now in the digital age, there's a different challenge, right? Because people like to shop online, but how can you sell a fragrance if you've never actually smelled the fragrance? It's almost impossible. People don't really take that risk, not even if it's a gift for someone else and they won't wear it themselves. So when it comes to digital and the world of fragrance, it's more so being about communication and awareness, desirability, maybe even purchase intent, but the final sales will predominantly happen in store because someone wants to smell the fragrance before they buy it. And what we do now when we have a new fragrance launches, we really invest in building that awareness because people come into stores, whether it's in an airport or a Sephora or a brand's own store, it's omnichannel, wherever the consumer wants to be, they already usually have in mind a couple of brands or fragrances that they're interested in from what they've heard online. Especially when it comes to Gen Z, nearly everything is impacted by TikTok and what they're seeing trending there. So for this latest launch from Carolina Herrera for Good Girl Blush, we wanted to do something really interesting. So the Good Girl line of fragrances, so it's the shoe, if anyone has seen it before. It's a very popular line, but we want to have lots of different fragrances within that line. So you have the Good Girl Classic, you have the EDP, you have EDT, you have Good Girl Glam. Anyways, this is about Good Girl Blush. So it's the pink shoe. It's very fresh fragrance with peonies inside. And we said, why not lean into strong women, female entrepreneurs, women that work in the spaces of tech and fashion, and let's do something innovative, but something that also supports or gives people access to organizations that can provide them support in that space. So not only did we say we're going to do hundreds of pop-ups around the world, but we thought, why not create an NFT collection to celebrate this new launch? Let's work with some amazing digital designers. So we decided to work with Ouroboros or Ouroboros, as they say, but I can't always manage to say that. And of course, we wanted this to be a real legitimate partnership as well. So that's why we said we need a partner or an organization like yourselves, one of Web3, so that anyone who has this NFT will be made aware of what you're doing and have access to all of the amazing resources that you're creating. So it was really a 360 launch. We had it in store. We put these NFT ATMs in Madrid and in Rio. The one in Rio was there in the arrivals of Rio Airport when it felt everyone from the world of fashion was arriving in Rio de Janeiro for Carolina Herrera's first ever fashion show outside of New York, which took place in Rio earlier this year. And we had a huge online media campaign and we did a big, what we would call like influencer drop. So we had influencers all over the world and different types of influencers, really women of influence at those crossroads of luxury and tech, receiving a bouquet of peonies, the fragrance and access to the NFT. So that is the kind of long story of what the campaign and the entire kind of activation entailed.
No, that's amazing to hear actually, because I know you and I actually didn't connect, you know, say out loud about this stuff. Women of Web3 were working with your agency, working closely with them. And when the agency first got in touch with us, as soon as I learned one of the activations would be in Rio, I was like, yep, I'm in, I speak Brazilian Portuguese, get me involved.
Wow. Yeah.
I just think it was quite brave actually to include that in, you know, something coming from a luxury brand like this and, you know, a brand with history. And yeah, it does take some bravery to sort of test this kind of thing out, because something like an NFT ATM where people don't already have a crypto wallet. You're helping them set one up using an email address. Mm-hmm. Yeah, onboarding people that know maybe quite often very little about this area. So it's an interesting opportunity from both sides of things, of like people that might be interested in NFTs, then, you know, testing out the actual physical product and vice versa. I suppose it's also the capacity for lots of things to go wrong when you're doing something so new.
It was an experiment on every level. Like when you do something in store, there's always so many different things that can go wrong and that you can't just fix immediately. Like online, you can be a bit more reactive. You can, you know, get into the back end and see what's happening. But when things are in store on the other side of the world, it's a whole different challenge, especially when you've got so many moving parts. But we learned so much and we know what we would do differently in the future, what we would do again. Every single day we were able to learn and gather a lot of data, whether it was from the, you know, retail staff on the ground or from what we could actually see in terms of online engagement.
Amazing. It was really exciting to get to work with you on it. And I'm really interested to see what you create next at Pooch from anything kind of Web3 and emerging tech focused. But before that, I'd love to speak about what's got you there. You know, you mentioned earlier about LVMH and Google. I'd love to hear a bit about your career so far, and because it's an amazing experience. How did you start out and what have maybe been some highlights along the way?
Well, I think for me, it always starts with education. And I get asked so many questions by amazing young people today. Actually, people of all ages, people really that maybe want to pivot or change and move into this space because it's not like it's existed for a long time. So you could be working 40 years and decide, this is what I want to do now. It didn't exist before, but that's my thing. I've been waiting for this. And I only know the way that I did it. And what I decided to do was look at how do the top executives in major luxury groups get to where they are today? And that hasn't really changed in the last 30 years or so. So I actually just used LinkedIn to look at, okay, who are the CEOs of the top major luxury brands and groups? They were all based in Paris. They were mainly French men. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to become a French man, but I can look at least, you know, the experiences that they've had. And I can probably have those experiences too, at least those very early stage ones. So from quite a young age, I knew I need to learn French. I need to move to France. I need to go to a top ranking French business school. And I need to do a couple of internships and really just follow that path. And then luckily, even though I had so many challenges along the way, constant rejection, like everything that could go wrong probably did go wrong because I wasn't meant to be in that system. I'm not French and I didn't grow up or, you know, belong in the French education system. So it wasn't the easiest path, but definitely it was the most direct path to getting those roles and landing those roles. So eventually I got into a French business school. I did my undergrad there. I did it through French. So even that was really, really tough studying completely a business degree through a different language. And I appreciate so much more people coming to the rest of the world and studying through English when it's not their first language either. And then I managed to land a couple of internships. And again, like started right at the bottom, but you work your way up to get those you know, ones that you're very, very proud to put on your CV. And in general, I understood French businesses, even like LVMH, they don't even want to take you until you already have a master's. So it was really when I started my master's, that's when I got access to those incredible internships. So I was at HEC. I was lucky enough to have Vincent Bastien as my luxury strategy professor. So he was a former CEO of Cartier, Vuitton, Yves Saint Laurent, and he wrote the book, The Luxury Strategy. So I had him my very first week. Wow. And throughout entire master's. So I knew that was a really pivotal moment. And at that point he'd retired from, you know, being an executive, but he was on many boards and kind of giving back to students. And the HR that I met in my very first week on campus at HEC was the one that ultimately gave me my full-time position after my internship at LVMH within Dior. And then it kind of took off from there. So once I ticked off those boxes that are kind of just that foundation that luxury groups really, really want their talent to have, which is, you know, it's education and internships. For me, it's all education, even those internships. Yes, you're working, but I don't know how much value I was really bringing to companies, you know, when you're that fresh. They gave me a lot more probably than I was giving them. And that just set me up then. And after a couple of years at LVMH Group, I decided, okay, if I really want to be legitimate within the digital space and the tech space, I need to go work in a tech company. And Google was the right one for me because I felt it gave me that 360 of YouTube, also search, display, crazy amount of data, cloud technologies, and a company that really knows how to grow. And in terms of its organizational growth, it's incredibly impressive. So I was able to go back to Ireland, where I'm from, and joined the EMEA headquarters there. But I actually had a global role. So I was a global account manager for LVMH Group. So I kind of was still with LVMH, but from the other side, which was really interesting. And that was really where I was able to hone my craft in understanding technology, AI. You know, at the time, Google was already saying we're an AI company and everything they were doing was powered by AI, whether it was the internal analytics, the actual ad products, everything they're doing with cloud. And after a couple of years, I said, okay, I'm ready to go back to the industry. I was never going to stay in tech, even though everybody told me once you go to tech, you'll never turn back. And I was like, you have not worked in luxury. So I'm sure I'm going to be back and no amount of free food or, you know, gym classes or whatnot could stop me from going back to the luxury industry. So I was very excited to make that move. And that's when I applied for the role that I currently have at Pooch. I was rejected after about 10 minutes, but I somehow managed to convince them by email to have a call and then it went well. So luckily, I managed to make it happen and it's been almost 3 years. And now I'm moving into my new position with them in the next days, actually, which I'm really excited about.
I'm honestly so impressed by how strategic you've been in terms of your... No, it's amazing. I think it's so impressive that you've got so specific about what it is that you wanted and then gone and worked out how to get there. I just think that's a really good quality. And I also think it's interesting the way you're clearly fascinated by that intersection of technology and luxury. And so Web3 would also be a sort of natural point of interest from that point of view. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did you end up coming across Web3? And I know... I'm sure it's part of your role to be kind of on top of all things digital, but was there something that got you into it as to, you know, like NFTs or DAOs or something metaverse focused that made you think, oh, I want to do more of this?
Really good question. So while I was at LVMH, I was very lucky to be there while they had Ian Rogers as their chief digital officer. So he was pretty new in the role when I had arrived, and he was really shaking things up, not just at LVMH, but the industry in general. And he was coming from the tech industry, so really pure tech background, Apple, Amazon, really into music. So he'd been on Apple Music. He had initiated the acquisition of Beats by Apple as well. So an incredible network within the music industry and very well respected within tech. So when I saw him moving from LVMH to Ledger, I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And Ian's a really smart guy, so he must be onto something. So that was one of the first kind of moments when I said, okay, this must be the next technological shift. And then when I started understanding that, okay, Web3, it's not just one specific thing, but it's an umbrella terminology with a lot of other components in there. Looking at blockchain, for example, I'm a firm believer that blockchain will be the future for a more sustainable fashion industry. I wrote my bachelor and master thesis on sustainability within luxury, and I really think transparency is going to be key to that. So also while I was at Google, I discovered a project happening at the time with Stella McCartney, who was still part of Kering Group, although now she's moved her house to LVMH. And at Google, we actually built an entire blockchain for every single one of her products within her brand to be able to understand the exact impact of every textile production. Where did it come from? How was it transformed? What was the impact on the environment? How many resources were used and whatnot? Where did it come from in terms of, you know, the geography around the world? So it was really in that kind of more practical applications that I came across Web3 and saw this as an opportunity. And then more and more, of course, seeing the trend of building miniverses, NFTs, things that were more consumer facing. And of course, that's when things became a bit more mainstream. And that's when the general population got a bit more excited about it as well.
With something like that, seeing that move from LVMH to Ledger as a sort of line in the sand as to, okay, things are going this direction. There's almost like a certain inevitability about it. If you see somebody like that jump ship, it's like, oh, okay, there's something interesting happening over there. Mm-hmm. I definitely got the same thing when I'd already been learning about all things Web3, NFTs and the metaverse. I suppose at that point, I didn't even know it was called Web3, but learning about all these, what felt like disparate technologies, I suppose. And when Facebook rebranded to Meta, I was like, okay, this is something that we really need to take seriously. Like if I was already sort of dabbling and thinking, I think I want my career in this instead, that was the kind of, I think it was actually, that was one of the things that made me think, okay, I'm actually going to go and work in this full time rather than just kind of, this is something I'm interested in trying to make work. So that's really interesting to hear your journey into it. And then with something like Web3, which is A, kind of intangible, but B, the use cases aren't always clear or would be clear enough. Was that quite hard to sell internally?
We get a lot of inbound requests. I think anyone listening who works in a major brand or in a group that has major brands knows this. It's nonstop, every single day, constant startups and platforms and agency reaching out. And I really started to notice a massive increase in companies that wanted to do things around AR, VR, 3D, building miniverses and stuff like this. And of course, they're trying to come with you with case studies from competitors within the industry to show you direct use cases. So I did go through kind of a big phase of taking calls with these companies so that I could learn what are they doing, how are they doing it, what's the cost, and what can I expect in return? Like, how can this elevate the brands that I work with? How could it increase our sales, our visibility, our desirability? And I felt that although the technology is there and people can build beautiful things, for the most part, very few of those companies understood luxury brands in terms of how do luxury brands function? What do they want to convey when they create a campaign? And what's the end goal? So it's really hard to find people who have both technical skills and an understanding of the luxury industry, which for me is a skill in itself. Like, if you want to work in the luxury industry, your experience in the industry is a hard skill that we need to understand that you've already built or that you at least have an interest in building. So it took quite some time for me to find partners that were able to do something that made sense in terms of the cost and that was also brand safe. And then the last part, which I still haven't figured out today, and I think no one really has, it's trying to understand when we do something in the Web3 space that's consumer facing in luxury, are we trying to reach the people who already know about Web3, whether it's metaverse or crypto or NFTs, or are we trying to bring fans of luxury brands and the luxury community into the Web3 space? Because they're completely different challenges and the way that you'd address those people is also completely different. So I haven't understood yet which one is more effective or do we need to be doing both? But it seems that everyone's trying to test a little bit of both of those two kind of directions.
I'd love to ask you more about that, actually, about that audience or community point. If it's a bit of a sort of Venn diagram of, yeah, people that already know and love Web3, yeah, or people that know and love luxury, or specifically something like Carolina Herrera or one of your brands, sort of heritage brands. What kind of crossover were you either predicting or are seeing as a result? Or I know you're saying it's sort of an experiment, but I suppose what are some conclusions that you're coming to so far?
So firstly, what we understood was culture makes a big difference as well. Where you're from, how open is your culture to technology? So we found that in Brazil, people were really, really open. They were very intrigued. What is this? How does this work? I want an NFT. I want to be able to get engaged with this technology. So that was actually the most prominent takeaway for us because we could see straight away in the uplift in NFTs. Whereas in Madrid, where we had the other NFT, people were maybe intrigued, but they were looking more so at the physical product and they didn't really understand, like, why would I need an NFT? What would I do with it? And that's a legitimate question. Do you need an NFT and what would you actually do with it? And that usually is only something that's relevant for someone that's already in the Web3 space and that places value on that. And in Europe, it seems that there isn't as much of an appetite versus in the Americas, where people are really open to innovation and discovery and there's a lot of curiosity. So that was the first takeaway in terms of how important it is in terms of where you launch these activations, because the audience is going to receive it differently. And then in terms of creating something that's either for an audience of Web3 people or an audience of luxury people, I would say today, obviously, it's going to be a lot easier to go to the Web3 people. You mentioned it right at the beginning. Do you have a wallet? Do you have any cryptocurrency? You know, how do you actually receive and store an NFT? So that's a really, really big challenge to overtake if you're going to focus solely on people who have never had any interaction, because you need to educate them, you need to onboard them, and you need to convince them that it's worth them spending a couple of minutes of their time to do so. So I think the low-hanging fruit is definitely engaging with people already in the Web3 space, but who perhaps are not so involved in luxury or fashion or beauty, than aiming for people who know about fashion and beauty but don't know anything about Web3.
Super interesting. And related to that, I know you've spoken on your own podcast about the luxury market in China and how that's huge already and only going to get bigger. Mm. Is that something you could tell me a bit more about and like what that might mean from a Web3 or that the sort of, you know, Web3 and emerging tech point of view?
Absolutely. So I'm absolutely fascinated by what's happening in China and what has been happening for decades, really. But one thing that really struck me in the last couple of months was the investments that the Chinese government have made in the metaverse. So they've already invested over $1 billion in building the metaverse for Shanghai. So they're building almost like a clone city. And imagine they plan on populating that metaverse with people who will work there. So there are going to be schools, there are going to be hospitals, there are going to be stores, you know, commerce. It's all going to be happening there rather than just on a website. And even already in China, they're super advanced on technology compared to the West. They have these kind of super apps where everything is integrated and streamlined. But obviously they have a very different way of running their country as well. So when they change a technology or they change a regulation, everything moves very quickly. And then when it comes to luxury, there is massive appetite for luxury brands in China. Until, you know, 30 years ago, most luxury brands weren't existing in China whatsoever. So it's been a really, really fast growth, especially in the last 5 years. During COVID, it didn't stop. It just kind of shifted. So a lot of luxury spend that Chinese would have made while traveling all of a sudden became domestic spend. An island called Hainan was developed. It was barely on the map pre-COVID, and now it's the single biggest duty-free location in the world in terms of luxury shopping. And it's a Chinese island, really, where just Chinese people go for holidays, to go shopping, to play golf. There are beaches. And a second island is being developed off the north coast of China. So it's kind of all happening at once, the development of luxury, the adoption of technology, and it moves so fast. So it's really interesting to see what's happening. And also when it comes to gaming in China, it's something that's really appreciated and has been for quite some time. So when you throw all of those things in together, it does make China really ripe for disruption. However, it's not as easy to just enter the market as it was a couple of years ago because it's far more expensive. Now everyone knows this is where you need to be. And they really do have, you know, a wall, the Great Firewall, and everything operates on different systems. So it's important to have teams that are there locally and that can help you. And Chinese speakers, people that understand the Chinese culture, it's really, really key.
Does that touch your role at all?
Yes, absolutely. China's been a really big focus for me. My almost 3 years now at Pooch, and in the next months, it's going to be even more important. So I'll be going back to China very soon for the first time since pre-COVID. But when in my role at Dior as well, I was in China quite often. I have a 10-year visa for China. I was constantly going to Shanghai, been to Shenzhen and a couple of other places as well. But it's expected by 2030 to represent 50% of all luxury spend. Mm. So it's a country that can't be ignored. I've been learning Chinese for a couple of years as well. So I'm very excited to go back and to see, because I know it has changed a lot during COVID and a lot of expats have left. So it's become even more closed, really, in terms of internationals. But if we don't understand it, you know, working at the headquarters of large luxury groups, then it's going to be very hard on a local level to be able to succeed in that market. So I feel we all have to take kind of the responsibility to educate ourselves and to go there and to speak with Chinese people, engage with people from there to understand what is it that they want, what is it that excites them, whether it's technology or creativity. Products coming from luxury brands.
Wow, that statistic is insane. It's going to be 50% of the luxury market is Chinese consumers. Yeah. I know I've kind of said it but I'm so impressed with your thirst for knowledge and the fact that you actually go and action this stuff. Of like, rather than thinking, I don't know, I'd love to understand sort of Chinese consumers better or whatever it is, you clearly kind of go deep on each, on your subject matter. And I guess the podcast and community that you also run that you started, Tech Powered Luxury, is also a reflection of that interest, that thirst for knowledge. So I'd love to hear a bit more about that and some of your learnings along the way and even some of the people that you've been struck by.
Thank you. Well, I guess I love to learn, and I know that when it comes to the luxury industry, I feel most of the time I'm the outlier. Like there are not I actually never really meet Irish people. It's like so rare. And you kind of are like, okay, what do I bring in terms of value? So for me, I'm always kind of looking, okay, what can I bring to the table that other people aren't bringing? Or, you know, what is it that I can really be a specialist in or have increased knowledge in that's going to make sure that things remain exciting for me? And I love to be in places that are growing. So I guess it's one of the things that I learned while I was at Google. in particular. It's like, be where the profit center of the company is. Like if you're in a team that is really viewed as a cost center and all it does is spend money and you're not able to measure value that you bring to the company, it's going to be hard to negotiate for extra budget or to, you know, go to events or to actually spend time learning new things. But if you're in a space that's seen as a profit center and it's, you know, searching out those areas of growth or future growth, I feel like that's where things can get very exciting. And digital today is, when it comes to e-business, online business, e-wholesale, e-retail, it should be an area of growth. And then if you add the China layer on top of it, it can get very, very exciting. So I guess that kind of orientated me towards this area as well. I know that it's going to be the next wave of strong growth for luxury. Mm. And like, how do you learn things like that? So I found it was very hard actually to get any information that was really up to date. So funnily enough, I kept being asked to provide information internally and externally. So I had a lot of business schools reaching out, maybe small startups, small fashion brands, like emerging independent designers wanting to learn about digital technology. How do I launch a YouTube channel? How do I do e-commerce? Does it make sense for me to be on Instagram? You know, these kind of questions. So I launched a course for the National College of Art and Design in Ireland. And it was called Tech Style, like Tech X Style. So that was kind of the first iteration of Tech Powered Luxury. And then it kept evolving and I started teaching at other schools as well, like Polymoda in Florence and ESSEC Business School in Paris, Naoma Business School, where I was a student. I teach Tech Powered Luxury there. It's also a module at HEC Paris, where I did my master's, but now I teach MBA and Executive MBA. And probably like over 30 schools now around the world, I've been able to teach this, but it's a module in two business schools. So full credited module. And at one point I realized my solution to everyone's questions wasn't really a solution to saving me time because I was spending quite a lot of time lecturing and I take time off to do that. So I use my days off for that. Or I do it in the evenings if I can do it on Zoom or whatnot. But now more and more people want it in person. So for those modules, I teach them full time in person on campus. And that's when I said, right, okay, I'm going to turn this into a podcast because I already had something at Google called Luxury Insider, but it was like a live podcast. So I'd invite anyone internally at Google to come. And then I'd have one external person from the luxury industry who'd come in and we'd kind of do a live interview. And I wouldn't be the only one asking questions, but I'd kind of be the MC. I'd bring the people on board. And afterwards, I'd always do a post on LinkedIn and share like kind of the key insights. And people kept saying, can you send us the recording? And the whole point was, it was like, you know, a closed door kind of production. So I couldn't record them and share them because it would mean we wouldn't get all the insights that we wanted and maybe couldn't get the answers to certain challenges or topics. So at one point I said, okay, it's time to turn Tech Powered Luxury from something in lecture halls and on Zoom to something public. And that's when the podcast idea came about. And it took quite some time, almost a year, to finally say, okay, I'm going to go live with this. But I'm very glad I did it because it's been, yeah, a huge learning curve and I've met so many incredible people. And now I get to also ask questions to people who before would have definitely ignored my emails because it probably wasn't worth their time spending a half an hour with me just to like answer my questions. But when I say, look, you know, hundreds, thousands of people can listen to this, that changes things.
That's amazing. And I also relate to that, the idea of, yeah, people that I look up to and, you know, would love to get some time with them, but well, why would they spend, 30, 40 minutes with me? Yeah, it's a bit of a different ball game if it's under the guise of a podcast rather than can I pick your brain, which is actually a message that I don't like receiving from people.
Exactly. I'm the kind of person that I feel so bad if someone takes, you know, a moment to send me a message and say, look, I really want to know how to do X, Y, Z. I see you've done it. Like, could I have some of your time? But if you're getting 50 of those messages a week, that would be a full-time job. So it got it got to a point where I was, you know, trying to send messages, whether it was on LinkedIn or Instagram or email, wherever people would find me. And I realized nearly everyone has the same question. So that's why I said, right, I'm going to launch this podcast and I'm going to get experts on in all those different fields. And I'm going to ask them those questions, whether it's career related or, you know, brand building, AI or whatnot. So a lot of the questions that I'm asking people, sometimes I know the answer myself and I've been working in that space, but I want to get someone else to come on and talk about it really in depth. And then when people come to me now with questions, most of the time I say, thank you so much for reaching out. I've got the exact podcast episode for you. Everything is kind of addressed in here. But if you have extra questions, do reach out and I'll be happy to answer. If I host events, I tell people come to live events. For me as well, It's a million times more rewarding to get to actually meet people in person and answer their questions live, whether it's through a panel or through a coffee during a conference or whatnot, versus trying to sporadically reply to questions in a DM when you have no context on somebody's life or what it is that they want to achieve. So yeah, the podcast is kind of something that has managed to connect most of those dots, but I still need that in-person component. And I think it's not just for me, but also for listeners who maybe have those other questions that are more personal to them that they really want to ask.
I'd love to know a bit about your predictions for what you think luxury brands might do in Web3 now that we've started seeing some dabbling from some of the big luxury brands, and you know, things like there have been NFT projects launched, or the occasional, say, like beauty DAO, things like that, and yeah, broader communities. But where would you see things going next, or do you even have maybe like recommendations of where you think things ought to go?
I think this is the moment where sustainability and technology and fashion can finally collide. That's my dream for Web3, to be this solution that brings it all together, like ultimate transparency. So no brand or consumer can say, oh, I didn't know that that was bad for the planet, or I didn't know that this garment caused, you know, a person harm. I really think that's the only way that things are going to change. It's got to start with brands saying, okay, we're going to harness this technology so we understand our full supply chain, we understand the impact, before it's something we have to do because it's just regulated. And we're starting to see it with the likes of Aurora Blockchain Consortium. But the technology is still new, it's nascent, and I think it has to develop a lot more for it to become something that's going to have impact, but it has to start. So it's really the behind the scenes kind of thing, but already I see some brands implementing this, like Jean Patou, a revived but old French brand. And on all of their items, there's a QR code. It's literally printed on a cotton tag and you scan it and you can literally watch a video of the person who made the garment. That's just incredible. And I really want to see more of that everywhere, because fast fashion, it's not the solution. We've used technology to create incredible speed and garment production, but we've lost everything else along the way. Not just, you know, the planet, but also quality and care. And the value of clothing is decreased, I think, when we, you know, produce in mass at speed. So let's try and use that technology to do something good.
Totally.
And then on the consumer facing side of things, I do see big opportunity when it comes to digital fashion. And I'm really following quite closely what Alice Delahunt is doing, for example, with Psyche, fellow Irish woman. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what she does next. She's just making the platform public. So you have these key holders, and basically what I see happening is her working with fashion brands or other platforms as well to build, you know, 3D and virtual experiences with fashion and creativity at its core. And you can go far beyond what would be feasible in the real world, because you don't have, you know, gravity or budget issues like you would to create something purely out of, you know, well, it can be digital diamonds, it could be fire, it could be a dress made of clouds. So I really feel like the next generation of designers, and today's designers who decide to, you know, upskill and get involved in this digital space, can do something really different there.
Completely agree. And there's a nice little synchronicity there, which is that Alice Delahunt was the first episode of season two, and you're going to be the first episode of season three.
Yes, I remember. And I remember reading an article, I think even in Vogue, about this interview that you did. I remember seeing a lot of coverage for it. So yeah, very exciting.
And also, side note, I really like the fact that you often wear Irish designers, that like on your Instagram, that you'll always be tagging the Irish designers that you're wearing. And I think there's something really nice about A, having a sort of signature, it's not quite a signature style, but you know, being known for something and like representing, you know, what you care about, and showcasing some designers that might not be as well known internationally. And I think that's really cool. I admire that.
Thank you.
Just finally, I wanted to know if you had any top tips or strategies. I'm guessing it might be quite learning focused in terms of like how people can get ahead in anything Web3 or emerging tech, or even where it crosses over with luxury.
I think that like community is at the core today. You're building a fantastic community, but it's not just knowing a community exists, it's getting involved. So, you know, not just subscribing to a newsletter and reading, but attending events, having a coffee chat. I really think following people on Instagram, kind of sharing their journey, supporting their journey as well when they're creating something, it's something really interesting. You can learn a lot. For people who are maybe a bit further in their careers as well, it's joining boards, whether it's advisory or executive boards. I think that's a really great way to get involved. Like if you're a senior stakeholder in a luxury brand and you want to learn more about technology, there's no better way you're going to learn than reaching out to a startup and saying, look, I'm an expert on luxury. I want to learn more about what you're doing. I think we'll have some really interesting conversations that can add real value to both your own personal development, but also to the development of whatever company is, maybe whose board you could join. And that's something that I'm doing a lot more of now as well. It's something really interesting as well. And it keeps me learning. And I also think teaching, ironically, can help you learn and stay ahead of the trends, because you won't be challenged more than you can be in the classroom. You have to really know your stuff. So every semester when I'm refreshing my curriculum for students, I have to really bring them the best of what's happening, because students are, especially MBA and executive MBA students or masters, they're in that mindset of, I'm taking maybe a year or two out of my life to just learn and absorb and come out, you know, the most educated version of myself, ready to whatever it is, create something or enter the workforce. And there's something really liberating when you really focus on learning. So I feel like these students, they're real sponges and they want to challenge everything, they want to understand, and they're really also challenging their own way of thinking. So I also encourage teaching as well as a way of learning.
I love that. Because yeah, learning is, and being able to focus on learning like that is almost like a sort of treat to yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, it's a big luxury. Like I see that with a lot of the students that I have. You know, a lot of sacrifice has to be made, not just financially, but also in terms of time, even opportunity costs, to say, I'm going to take a step back now and just really focus on learning for whatever reason. If you're going to pivot or you're going to start something new, or you want to move country or continent or industry, I do think that it's a great way to do that.
Amazing. Well, I've really enjoyed our conversation and appreciate you taking the time. So lastly, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. I share so much, actually. So it's at ash.macdonald. You really see the behind the scenes and lots of Irish fashion, like you said, lots of Irish designers that I love to wear. And on LinkedIn, I share loads there. And then, of course, Tech Powered Luxury. So it's on Apple Podcasts, it's on Spotify, it's on Instagram, TikTok, X. Literally, you'll find it everywhere. We have weekly episodes with amazing people like yourself coming on and talking about the intersection of technology and luxury.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you've liked this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.